The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
We're so glad you've stopped by. Welcome to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. Come indulge with us in the next hour as we explore a region of the world, its wine and spirits. We'll also talk about food, tours, and other amenities unique to this area. Sit back and enjoy. Now, here's Kimber Stonehouse.
All right, today on Around the World in a Glass, we are truly going to go around the world in your glass. So hopefully you have your seatbelts fastened and your tray tables upright and in their locked position and your and a really great hand on your glass of wine, because we wouldn't want to spill that wine. We are going to talk about the sweet stuff today. In Australia, they call them stickies. They come by all sorts of names. Port, Madeira, Sherry, Tokaj, if you're talking about from Hungary, Sauternes, Barzac. The list goes on and on. Let's not forget ice wine. And then you have all the sparklers, Moscato d'Asti. Prosecco can be made even sweeter than it often is. Champagne, Brocato di Aqui. And then, of course, we have some here in the United States, too. So we are going to, without any further ado, jump into pairing the stickies, the sweet stuff, or drinking the sweet stuff, figuring out which ones you want to buy or which ones you want to experiment with, because there is – they run the gamut. And I think they're fantastic. They're one of my favorite things to drink, but I don't drink them often. A couple of overview notes about the sweet stuff. Some of them are going to be called – are going to be fortified, which means your Port, Sherry, Madeira, for example, are going to be fortified. There's a few others, but those are the big ones that you may know. And what fortified means is after the fermentation process is over, we add in some grape spirits. So some fortified wine that is a little heavier in alcohol, and then that kind of makes them a little richer. Ports, Sherrys, Madeiras tend to run about 17-ish percent alcohol. Most of your wines, if they haven't been manipulated too badly in the vineyard and in the winemaking process, are going to run, depending on how sweet they are, 8% alcohol, all the way up to about 16 or 17. So they can get up to that 16, 17%, but not all yeast can function there. And the yeasts that they're using to make your Port, Sherrys, Madeiras don't function well after probably about 14 or 15%. Most natural yeast doesn't always function as well once you get past that percentage. You have to help it in some way to make the alcohol higher. So Ports and Sherrys and Madeiras tend to be fortified. At Sportsman's Fine Wine and Spirits, we have a wine and beer license. So that means that when we pour wines for you to taste or to enjoy in the bar, they can be up to 17, 20% alcohol because they can be those fortified wines. They can be vermouth even, which is another thing that we haven't talked about, but it is a fermented spirit. You often put it in martinis and other cocktails. However, we do not have a license where you can pour distilled spirits. So when you come in, you're like, yeah, but this is only 17% alcohol. It's the same amount of alcohol as in that bottle of port over there, and it's pomegranate liqueur. Yes, but that one is distilled, and the other one is fermented. So that is the distinction. So it's annoying to all of us sometimes, but that is the distinction between a fermented beverage and then something that is distilled, which is heated up to get the alcohol and works with, sometimes with grain spirits and things like that. All right. One of the big things we're going to talk about today, besides going around the world in your glass, we are going to talk about pairing wines, these sweet things, with dessert. All right. I have had many, many times my wine and food pairings that I've been at other places, really nice restaurants. I have done some myself, and I have had some that have been like, oh, holy cow, this is amazing. And you're kind of transcended into like a third thing. It's not just food or wine, but it's this wow moment that the food and wine worked amazingly well together. And then I've had times where it's like, wow, those are really bad together. I don't know what somebody was thinking, but this is not good. And I'm going to eat my food and then I'm going to drink my wine, because they did not match. And that happens. If you're having a dinner party and you're worried about that, then my suggestion is always to do a trial run with your dessert as you're going to make it. And with the bottle of wine, if it's not too expensive, or if it's an expensive bottle, maybe get, you know, the closest thing you can get to it. Instead of buying Chateau Yquem at $700 or $800 a bottle, maybe buy Sudereau at $150 or a different Sauternes that is like enough in its processing. All right, so let's just jump right in today and tackle port, sherry, and Madeira. I'm lumping them together because for most of us, they kind of get lumped together in our heads. And that's if you even know about port or about sherry and Madeira. Those are kind of the two that are off the beaten path. Port, most people have heard about it. Some people like it. Others do not. Liking it, disliking it. I think there's a that people can find a sweet wine that appeals to them if you like sweets. You know, we've talked about that with the bubbles. If you absolutely hate carbonation, I can't sell you a bottle of sparkling anything or a bottle of beer or a bottle of, or a can of pop. I can't sell you any of those things because you don't like carbonation. But if you do like sweet things but you haven't had success with your wines, maybe you just need to experiment a little bit more. Try some things by the glass when you see them offered by the glass. Show up at some tastings and find out what it is you like and what it is you don't like. And maybe today you'll get some tips to go out and try something new. So if we start with port, because that one's the most common, we'll kind of start there. Port comes in a variety of styles, a variety of prices too. If you've ever looked at a vintage port, you know that it can be quite expensive. Tawny ports that have an age statement on them are also expensive. So what is all the difference? Port, first of all, comes from Portugal. You are going to see other countries, Australia in particular, will sometimes identify their stuff as port. So it is a port style wine. So they make it kind of like they do in Portugal. But technically, port has to come from Portugal. If you really want to get specific when you're looking at your port and you can't see where it comes from, if you can't read the fine print on the back that says, you know, product of Portugal, you can see if it says the word Porto and it have an O on the end. And as far as I know, those are supposed to always be from Portugal. I'm sure somebody out there has broken the rules. But if it says a Porto or Porto on it, it should be from Portugal. There's some amazing, absolutely amazing producers of port. If you've never had port, then I'm going to tell you it comes in a variety of styles. I'm going to talk briefly about each one because I do want to get through a whole bunch of other sticky things today. And I want to spend some time on those food pairings, whether they're desserts or savory, and tell you my ways of getting around that and hopefully making sure it works. There's never a guarantee, but sometimes you can lessen the odds, right, of the good or the bad parts. You can increase your good odds and lessen the bad parts. All right, so ruby, port, and then there's vintage, and then there's tawny. Let's just limit it to those. There's also a few others, late bottled vintage. But let's limit it, first of all, to the rubies, the vintage, and the late bottled vintage, and then the tawnies. Ruby port, I don't know that it actually ever says that on the bottle. I've yet to see it on one. Six Grapes is a brand that we would classify as a ruby port. They're younger. They have not a whole lot of age on them. They tend to be bottled, I believe, right after they're processed and fortified into port. They don't see a lot of oak. They're inexpensive. They're going to cost you, set you back maybe $10 or less dollars a bottle, maybe $15. If you buy something that's a late bottle vintage, then it might set you back even $25. So port, if you want to go and just try port, these are going to have – we call it ruby because it has red fruit flavors. So you're going to get a lot more of the red fruits, raspberries and cherries and just more fruit in the front. At least that's why I call it ruby. That's kind of how I break it down in my head. Then if you get into the tawnies, remember this is just your basic overview, something for you to take home and go and experiment with and take advantage when you see port served for dessert. Try that out, maybe with your dessert or maybe skip your dessert and do what I do, which is have a liquid dessert because sometimes I just don't need more food. But something sweet at the end of a meal would be fantastic, and often port is served at most restaurants, a by-the-glass kind of thing at nicer restaurants. All right, so you've got the rubies. And I briefly mentioned late bottle vintage. They're going to run you a little bit more money, but I think they're well worth it. They usually run $20-$25, I believe, on the shelf, and I just think they're really good. They're an easy little drinker. They're not as caramely and as expensive as the Tawnies, and then they're not quite as light and fruity as the ones I would classify as a ruby, like the Six Grapes. So that's kind of a thought there. Moving into the Tawnies, they are going to come with an age statement on them. So they're going to some of your brand names are going to be Graham's, Dow's, Taylor Fladgate, Sandemann's is a favorite of mine. I like Graham's and Sandemann's probably the best. Other people who I work with and in the industry like Taylor Fladgate the best. And then there's people who like Dow's the best. So you know what? I don't turn down any of them because I think they're all good. But usually you end up having a favorite after you've tried them for a while. They're going to come in age statements that often are going to be your 10, 20, 30, and 40 year. And like everything else, when it gets older, the price goes up. So that means that if it's a tawny, it means it's aged in oak. All right. So if it's a 10-year tawny, that means it spent 10 years in oak after it was fermented and fortified. They threw it in some oak barrels and left it sit for 10 years. And then they took it out, bottled it, and sold it. Or they took it out for 20 years, 30 years, or 40 years. A 10-year port, probably going to set you back $25-$30. A 20-year port is going to be around that $55 to $70 price point, depending on where you're buying it and what brand you're buying. A 30-year port is going to be, I think, around $110, $125. And then a 40-year port, you're going to go upwards of $200, I think. Could be $175, might be $250, depending on the brand you buy. The reason, first of all, keep in mind, we've talked before about aging. So the reason it keeps going up is it's spent all that time being aged in the barrel and there's no money being made. It's taking up inventory space. You know, think about it. 40 years, it's sitting in a barrel. I don't want to have to trip over something for 40 years in my apartment waiting for it to be old enough for me to drink. I mean, if you just put that in a little bit of perspective, you've got to think that the CFO or the company's like, are you sure that's not ready to sell yet? And they're like, no, this is a 40-year bottle of port that we're making here. So it also, we haven't talked about it before, but the Angel's Share comes into effect. And anything that's aged, especially when it's aged for a long time, Cognac talks a lot about the Angel's Share. Well, remember the barrels? The whole reason for aging them is to impart the oak flavor, but it's also to help it gradually oxidize. So it kind of gets more rich and more savory and loses some of its fruit flavors as it ages in the barrel, whether you're talking cognac or port or rum or scotch or any other amazing thing that they age in barrels, even wine, when you age it in barrels before you bottle it, like the Spanish ones we talked about last week, those are wines. So what happens is the barrel allows it to breathe. Well, if air is coming out or coming in, then air is also going out. And if you've ever left a glass of water sit around for a while, you know that eventually, especially here in Phoenix, it evaporates. So the same thing is happening at a very gradual pace out of those barrels. And they say it's up to as much as 6% a year of their product disappears. Now, I'm not going to sit here and do the math, partly because I don't have a calculator, but if you think that every year your barrel of port, say you have one big barrel of port that you're going to age for 40 years, every year 6%, maybe not that, maybe some years it's only 4, of that barrel is going to evaporate. Okay, and then 6% again the next year. Well, if you're not careful, you're not going to have any port left. So what they do in the barrels is they often top up and kind of combine because they'll have more than one. You know, I'm poor. I only have one barrel of port to age. But, you know, people who have, you know, lots and lots of that they do this for a living, they might have, you know, I don't know, 25 or 30 barrels that are going to be 40-year port. So they kind of condense them down because the bigger the gap, the more it evaporates. So they have to kind of condense them down. So that's when anything is barrel-aged. The Angel's Share, the part that's going to evaporate, it's going to start to add up and cost you money. So that's one reason the price goes up exponentially. So it's the storage space, and then it's also the fact that you're going to lose a little bit every year. That's the same is true with cognac, with scotch, with anything that's aged very many years, anything over probably 5 or 7. It's all of those things in a combination. All right, so vintage port, you know, you go and you buy a bottle of vintage port at the store, or you go and you look at the vintage port compared to the tawny. And maybe a vintage port from 2007 is $75 on the shelf. And you're like, well, that's 5 years old. What's the difference between this bottle of port and that bottle of tawny over there? Well, vintage port is aged in the bottle, So it's fortified, it's finished, boom, it's ready to be bottled, and it's aged for however many years in the bottle. So if I buy a vintage port that has been, say, I'm trying to remember a year that's actually a vintage. Anyway, maybe say 74. I think that was a vintage. A vintage port from 74. It has been aged in the bottle since it was produced and made into fortified wine. It never saw the oak aging process. So it's a very different type of flavor profile. Vintage port is amazing. I absolutely love vintage port. I desperately love tawny port. One is going to have a longer shelf life than the other. A tawny port, once you open it, if it takes you a couple of weeks to drink it, it'll probably be just fine. Might start to lose some of its beauty after a week or two. But you know what? If you don't set it in the sunshine, you put it in a cabinet, or even better, maybe put it in the fridge, then, you know, it's going to savor its flavor. A vintage port, if it's an old vintage, I've had some times when customers have brought in to celebrate a birthday, they've brought in a fantastic bottle to share. And it's been, you know, 1960s or 1965, and 66, I think, was the vintage year. And it goes quick. So everybody gets their little bit, and you savor it, and then, you know, the flavor starts to disappear very quickly because it already has that much age on it. So vintage ports are very different. They're going to have a different flavor profile. With the tawny port, especially one that's at least 20 years old, but even at a 10-year, you're going to get some beautiful brown sugar and caramel and just kind of this richness in your mouth. It's just really beautiful, wonderful. It goes well with people like to pair it sometimes with chocolate cake. You can also pair it with creme brulee. You know, things like this are really – they can work quite well with the tawny port. Ruby port, on the other hand – a vintage port. I don't want to taint that with anything because a vintage port is so very special. They don't make vintage port in every year, as the name designates. It is a specific vintage. So to declare a vintage, all the right, you know, stars have to be aligned and the grapes have to be beautiful and has to rain at the right time. And they're like, oh, this is a beautiful year for port. These grapes are amazing. We're going to make vintage. I know 07 was a vintage year, and as I tasted on Sunday, 09 is also a vintage year. The one I had on Sunday was not so awesome. I wouldn't part with my cash for that one. But that doesn't mean all 09s. That just means that particular bottling. And it could have just been open too long at the place where I had it. All those things have a factor. So have I panned the 09 vintage? Absolutely not. I'm just waiting to try another one. 07 was a beautiful vintage. The wine has been fantastic. Every time I've opened it and tried it, the vintage port has been amazing. Vintage port, the beauty of it is if you buy it and drink it when it's young, it'll stay on your shelf at home for several weeks after you open it, 3-4 weeks after you open it, if it's a young vintage, because it's going to continue to age, it's going to continue to change. So every time you pour a glass of that port and drink it after dinner, it's going to have a little different flavor profile. So that, to me, is the cool thing about buying a young vintage port. You can, you know, it's going to be pretty austere when you first open it up, so I wouldn't suggest opening it up and having a glass that night. I would open it up and let it set for about a week. Now I'd have a glass. Or try it every once in a while and say, hey, what's it taste like now? And it's going to change as it ages. What you're doing is you're speeding up the aging process. So instead of laying it down in your cellar and aging it for 20 years, you are going to age it a little quicker by opening it up and pouring out a glass and savoring it and over the next several weeks. So it's just kind of one of those things you can do. So that's the little bits and pieces of port. We have a lot to cover today, so I'm not going to talk more about port. That's just kind of like the launching part of our discussion today about wine and sweet stuff is starting with port, because most people kind of know a little bit about port or maybe have tried port and loved it or hated it. So we are going to start there. We are going to go to break here in just a second or two. When we come back, we are going to talk about sherry and Madeira. And trust me, they're going to be quick. I'm going to talk a little bit about the history. And once we talk about sherry and Madeira, we are going to move into a whole lot of information about why your Twinkies don't taste good with your dessert wine. Trust me, it's really not a good idea. We'll be right back.
News. Opinion. Hear me. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com. Tune in to the Voice America Variety channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community.
Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All right. So I was kind of cramming in all the stuff about port. I don't think I forgot anything important, or vitally important. So anyway, if you have a question about port, please feel free to email us. I'd love to answer your question on the air even. Sherry, we talked briefly. I think I mentioned last week at when I talked about Sherry that it's not a little old lady drink. I love Sherry. Like I said, I often put that in my cookies instead of vanilla. Add a little fun to my recipes with my baking. It is just absolutely fantastic. It comes in dry, so you can get some that are not sweet. I had one about 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was fantastic, but oh my goodness, was it not sweet. It was really what we call dry. Didn't have all that sugar. It just had some wonderful, wonderful flavor profile. And then you can get the sweet ones, and they come in a variety of styles. I'm not going to go into everything to do with sherry. I could lecture for probably 3 hours on sherry. And you don't want to know all that. What you want to know is a place to start. So you can start with – I like the PX, Pedro Ximenez, I think is how you say it. But they're the PX sherries. I like those as a place to start. Lustau, L-U-S-T-A-U, makes a wonderful little bottle. I think it's going to be about $25 on the shelf. Your sherries, again, they're not going to age poorly on your cabinet at home. So, I mean, I put mine underneath so it's not in the sun because Phoenix is dead. You know, the sun here is pretty harsh on your wine. It kills it quick. But sherry is going to have some time. It's not going to go bad on you really quickly, like maybe a vintage, really old vintage port would, or even a bottle of wine. I mean, if I have a bottle of wine and I don't put it in the fridge or drink it all in 2 or 3 days, it really doesn't taste very good. I mean, you have really overpriced vinegar about a week later. Sherry is not going to do that. So it's a fantastic thing to bake with, to drink and just enjoy a little bit here or there. You know, a little like 2 or 3 ounce pour in the evening. It's just really nice. Some people use sherry as an aperitif, which means before dinner, especially on the lighter, drier style. Or they use them after dinner as something to either go with dessert or just something to, you know, savor after dinner instead of having dessert, maybe just have something, the liquid dessert, and have just something to savor there at the end. Sherry comes from a very complex process. We talk about the Solera system, S-O-L-E-R-A, Solera system with sherry. And what that means is almost all sherries are blended. And so they have, you know, you go to Lustau and they've got rows and rows and rows and rows of barrels of sherry. And what they do is when the sherries are blended. So you'll have, you know, some old sherry here and you'll have some younger sherry here, and they'll put, you know, 2 tablespoons of this one and 3 tablespoons of that one, and then a whole bunch of the younger one. And then they'll age it and fortify, you know, they'll let it age together, and then they'll bottle it. So sherries are done with the Solera system, where they just kind of mix and blend to get the flavor that they want for that style of sherry. Sherry comes in about a dozen different styles. PX, Oloroso, Amontillado, Manzanilla, Fino. I mean, the list goes on. And then you have East India and Pedro Ximenez that I've talked about, pale cream, regular cream. So I just recommend starting with the Pedro Ximenez because I like that one. It's going to be on the sweet side. It's going to have a lot of raisiny and caramely kind of flavors. But it's a nice place to start. So it's a sweet, but you still get enough little richness that you're not overwhelmed. It's not going to be, for me, they're not cloying. I don't feel like I'm eating something or drinking something that has two or three cups of sugar in it. I mean, I've had sometimes a coffee drink that somebody's made and or even a cocktail at a bar. And I'm like, wow, this is way too much sugar because I don't like things that are overly sweet. So I tend to buy things that are a little more well-balanced. Or I want something sweet, but I don't want it to be cloying and syrupy. You know, Aunt Jemima maple syrup is not what I'm looking for in my wine glass. I'm looking for something that has some balance and some richness, some complexity to it, some earthiness, all those wonderful things that make it sherry. Sherry, besides the Solera system, one other thing that you want to talk about when you mention sherry is its process. It has been oxidized, much like port, and the next one that we're going to talk about quickly is Madeira. It has been oxidized, so that's why it holds its age on your shelf. The tawny ports that are aged for so long, those have been oxidized. So within reason, they're going to be oxidized. So they last longer on the shelf than if it was, you know, a tawny port or a sherry that or a product that doesn't have that opportunity to be oxidized. One of the things that happens with sherry is comes from a specific part of Spain, by the way, Jerez. It comes from the specific part of Spain. And they've been doing it for a long time, but this they've put in the barrel. They've got it fortified. They're ready to make it. They've decided which ones are going to become the dries and which ones are going to become the Olorosos. So they've kind of got it sorted out, and they're getting ready to age it. Then they put them in the casks, and this magic begins, according to most books. It's not magic. It's just something that happens to be the air in this region of Spain. And this yeast comes and called flor, F-L-O-R, comes and covers the sherry in that barrel so that it's protected, but yet at the same time it's allowed to continue to age and change its character. So what that does is create some of the sherry flavors that we like, that flor that's on there. All right, so sherry is one of those things, just go buy a bottle and see what happens. You know, get yourself a PX or maybe a cream sherry and just try it and see what you think. I think it's very misjudged. It doesn't go with everything. I think it would be okay with chocolate cake. I tend to just drink mine by itself. It goes fantastic in my chocolate chip cookies. I think it needs things that aren't necessarily overly chocolate, but maybe things that have some caramels and that kind of thing. So if you do like, you know, I think it would probably go pretty good with apple pie. I think that might be a really fun thing. Some people, when they make like apple crisps and things like that, they use a lot of brown sugar, and that's going to complement with sherry. So I think that sherry would complement those kind of flavors that aren't overtly chocolate. People tend to want to lean toward port with chocolate cake. I like to lean toward Madeira. I really quite like Madeira. Madeira has been around for ages, and in fact, they say it was probably one of the first wines that we had in the States was Madeira. They used it to load the boats. Now, keep in mind, they weren't ships like we know today. We're talking 1300, 1400, 1500, 1600, so not motorized. And they were sending them, you know, overseas to be filled with rum casks to bring back, depending on what type of time we're talking here, certainly 1600, 1700, 1800s. So the ship needs to be loaded down on its way to the islands in the Indies so that it will sink low enough and not be beat all over the place in the storms across the Atlantic, right? So they would load it up full of this kind of crap wine, and it would go across to the Indies and be unloaded. And then they would send back the rum or whatever that people wanted to buy in Madeira and in Europe. All right, well, this went on for a while, and they were just using this crappy wine that they did. And then pretty soon, maybe somebody was a little desperate on boat, and he decided to try some of that wine. It was actually really good because it had been oxidized and aged and everything else. So they found that this was a really great way to have wine that you couldn't ruin this wine. I mean, even here in Phoenix, if you leave a bottle of Madeira in your car and it's 115 outside or 117 or whatever, and you leave it in there for even 2 or 3 days, that wine is going to be just as good as it was before you left it in the car. It's already been oxidized. It's already been baked a lot before it's ever bottled. So that, to me, is the coolest thing about Madeira. You can't destroy this stuff. You find an aged bottle of Madeira and pay a fortune for it, it's going to be fantastic. Even if it takes you 3 months to drink it, it's still going to taste good. Do I recommend leaving your wine in the car, even if it's expensive Madeira? No, I do not. I don't ever recommend leaving your wine in the car. However, That's the beauty of Madeira. It's already been oxidized. It's already been cooked. It's not going to be destroyed. It's amazing stuff. It has really cool flavors. Sometimes some people almost always think about it tasting, and they talk about it tasting a little like burnt caramel or burnt butterscotch. You know, that that amazing aroma when you're cooking in the kitchen and you're caramelizing your regular sugar into that wonderful caramelized texture and flavor when you're baking. So you're basically you're frying sugar in butter. It's really fat free. And you you're doing that kind of aromas you get out of it, and sometimes the flavors, especially if you're just about ready to push it too far to the edge and it becomes almost burnt sugar, it's right in there is where you get some flavors in Madeira. Madeira is very cool. It's inexpensive if you buy some that are on the shelf. I think we have some for $15, $25. You can spend more money on it than that. It's a great place to explore and taste, and that is going to go fantastic with, in my opinion, with chocolate cake. I like those flavors together. All right, we are going to move on. I'm going to run out of time today because we have so much to talk about. I want to talk about some food pairings, some successes that I've had and been a part of, and then maybe some not-so-successes and why they worked and why they didn't. All right, so when you're – you know, I made that crack about Twinkies, and I'll never forget when I was watching Grease as a younger person. I was watching the movie Grease, and she's like having her wine in high school with her Twinkies, and they're making fun of her. She's like, it says right here, it's a dessert wine. I think that even when I was younger, it did not sound like a good idea. but, you know, maybe it works for some people. It doesn't work for me. When I want to pair my wine and my dessert together, if I'm having a fancy dinner and I want to pair dessert with my wine, I'm really careful to watch a couple of things. So here are my tips for making sure it works for you, even before you actually sit down and bake the cake and taste it. What I like to do is I like to look at the sugar content because they need to be pretty equal. So if your dessert wine is, say, 50% sugar, you just say the number 50 is where you taste it. It tastes like it's got, you know, it's 50. Out of 1 out of 100, I'm going to put this dessert wine at 50. And then you go over here and you taste your dessert. And out of 1 out of 100, oh, my dessert's at like 75. I think that'll be close enough. So you've got a wine that hits 50 on your 1 to 100 scale. Let's say 1 is not sweet and 100 is way sweet. And then you're putting your cake or your dessert on the same scale, and it's at 75. Would I pair those wines together? No, I would not. That wine and that dessert, I would not put together. I would find something that was within about 5 points on that kind of a scale. So if my dessert over here is at, say, 50, and my wine is at – or my wine is at 50 and my dessert is at 75, I'm going to find something that's closer together. Because what happens – and it happens with regular foods too. What happens is your dessert wine is awesome on its own, and your dessert is fantastic on its own. But what happens when you put them together is your dessert tastes fantastic – but your wine tastes a little bitter because it doesn't have enough sweetness and acidity to stand up to that cake or that pie. So that's why the complexity there is very difficult. If your dessert is sweeter or if your wine is sweeter, the other one will taste bitter or not very sweet. And kind of flattens out your pairing. So it makes your cake not taste that great because it's too sweet. And now your wine doesn't taste that great because it's not sweet enough. So that's why I really recommend the trial run. I have had a few things that have just been amazing. One of them was a recent event that I went to, and I took a bottle of wine for dessert. I took an ice wine, which we haven't talked about, but they're amazing. A Canadian ice wine made from Cab Franc grapes. And when I got there to the house that we were having, she had made a cheesecake with blackberries and blueberries in it. So it's a rich cake. Right? Very rich. It was a homemade cheesecake. And if you've ever made or enjoyed homemade cheesecake, they're amazing. And so we decided to try the Cab Franc with it. It was an aged ice wine. I'd had it for about 5 or 6 years. And ice wine, especially Cab Franc ice wine, this was an Enniskillen. And it runs about $100 or more on the shelf. And it's a half bottle. So I think it's a 375. So it's a little bottle of wine. It's only half filled. It's only the half size. So it's expensive, and it's a half size. So, ouch, it hits you both places, right? Well, you only need about 2 or 3 ounces of a dessert wine, and most people are good with that. And if you're wanting to drink more than that on a dessert wine, then you need to go to things that are less expensive. And they're out there. There's no reason you can't find them. So we pour each of us a little bit of this dessert wine after we put a slight chill on it, probably about 55 degrees, because it doesn't need to be ice cold at 40 like you would do for, you know, some other white wines. It needs to be about 50 to 60 degrees. So we had our ice wine. And it's red in color because it comes from a red grape, and it's rich, and it smells heavenly. In fact, it smells a little like blackberries, and it smells a little like maybe a hint of blueberry, and then some wonderful other aromas that come in. And we taste a little bit of that amazing cheesecake and a little bit of that wine. It has to be one of the best pairings I've ever had anywhere. And here it just kind of happened at random. I brought the bottle, and she had made the right pairing for it. And when we as a group had a couple of choices for dessert that night, we all decided that this would be the best one for our dessert with that cake. Some of the things that made it perfect was the creaminess of a cheesecake. So if you're making a cheesecake with all of the heavy fat and cream that goes into it, and you know, Philadelphia's best, it's really, really rich and very creamy. One of the beautiful things about that ice wine was not only was it very sweet, it also had some acidity that hits you. Remember, we talked about acidity being alongside the jaw, and you just got that bracing acidity. So the acidity and the red fruits flavors that came out of that beautiful bottle of ice wine complemented the cheesecake. So the acidity kind of cut through all of the cheese so that it wasn't so thick and rich, but at the same time, the berries in the ice wine complemented the berries in the cheesecake. Absolutely amazing pairing. One of the best I've ever had. But again, our sweetness factors were on the same level. I didn't have a wine that wasn't able to stand up to the sweetness of that cheesecake, but I also had acidity balancing the cream and the cheese. So one of the things that I like to do is if I'm worried about a pairing missing, I will either not do them together, or if I really have to pour this dessert wine, I love this bottle of Madeira, port, sherry, ice wine, whatever it is, I'll pair that with something called savory. So what I would call a savory. So maybe a cheese plate or a really rich pate or something that has a little spice to it, a little heat to it, because then you're not crashing. Your two things go quite well together. So that's a kind of a way to cheat if you absolutely have to have this wine. One of the pairings that we did at the store, I picked for the last wine list, not the current wine list, the one before, Hungarian Tokaj. Amazingly sweet wine out of Hungary. Just beautiful wine. One of my favorites. I really love Tokaj. I have loved Tokaj for many years, but they're expensive. They're going to set you back $45, $55 a bottle for a five Poutonnes. I forgot how to spell that word. Five Poutonnes. But the acidity is amazing. So we poured one by the glass. That was my choice to put on the list because most people don't know Tokaj. So it was a nice way to introduce people to something different for a dessert wine. And get your little 3-ounce pour. Well, what's going to go with this on our food menu? Blue cheese. Blue cheese was the most amazing pairing with that Hungarian Tokaj. So here you've got this really sweet wine, but you know, and you're probably thinking, but Kimber, you haven't kept any of your rules. You've got something that's really sweet and something that is so not sweet. Well, because you're looking savory instead of sweet, they don't crash. They complement. That's not the easiest thing in the world to do, but when you start playing with it, you can create some amazing pairings. So you've got this sweet Hungarian Tokaj and this very big, rich blue cheese, and you put them together, and you're just like, oh, my gosh, these go amazing together. There are other things that would go well with Tokaj. I think a good creme brulee would go well with Tokaj. There's several other dessert styles that would go well with Tokaj. But that blue cheese was just one of those pairings that you're just a little stunned that it went that well when you actually put it in your mouth and do it. I have a recipe for chocolate bread, and I'm going to tell you about that recipe and what it goes with and why that works as soon as we come back. And I'm not going to forget to go back and define what Tokaj is. I just thought I would tell you about how awesome it was, and right after the break, I will tell you about Hungarian Tokaj.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
step up to the microphone. View the finalists right now on VoiceAmericaKids.tv. America's next great star is waiting to be discovered. Step Up to the Microphone is an exclusive presentation for VoiceAmerica.tv, where you can see and hear America's next top child star. The program is hosted by Voice America's own Cassie Frazier, and new episodes will be available every week exclusively at VoiceAmericaKids.tv. You can say you saw them at the beginning of their superstar career. Tune in to VoiceAmericaKids.tv.
Have you ever wanted to ask a direct question to a private investigator? If so, you'll want to listen for the Private Eye Nightline with private investigator John Ciaccio. John and his guest experts will answer your questions about infidelity, drug issues, custody, restraining orders, and more. Sometimes there are sensitive issues involving a family member or other loved one. We're here to help. The Private Eye Nightline is broadcast live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel. Racism, healing, oneness of humankind. It is time to join millions of people all over the world who openly talk about racial healing. Some of us are not sure how to tread when discussing race and culture. Until now. Tune in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with host Sharon E. Davis. Engage with experts and notables. Have a question but are not sure how to ask it? Test it out with our show. It's a safe harbor to explore views and situations that we face every day. A Safe Place to Talk About Race airs live every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All right, so Takai, I was talking about that and how amazing that went with blue cheese. Takai is from Hungary. Spelled a couple of different ways. You'll see it sometimes T-O-K-A-Y. I see it most often because I'm looking at the labels coming out of Hungary. T-O-K-A-J, I think is usually how it is, or maybe sometimes J-I. So there's some spins on that. Just quickly, I didn't realize this until I was actually reading and preparing for this. Tokai has, and Hungary in general, has had just a really rough way to go. We talked a little bit last week about Spain and its difficulties over the years, and Tokai was an amazing beverage, always has been. But it kind of got hit hard first with phylloxera. So that stupid little bug, that louse, attacked the Hungarian vines, and it was just devastated. And then they tried twice to come back from that. And if you know your little bit of history over there in Europe, so about early 1900s, they're being devastated by phylloxera. About 1917 was the breakout of World War One, and 1939, Hungary has already been taken over but is now part of the Axis under Hitler. And 1939 begins World War Two. Well, Austria, Hungary, Germany, that kind of was the heart of all that. Well, then if you do a little more research, you realize that in 1949, they're finally coming out of World War II, Europe is trying to get it back together. And then, you know, as they're piecing things back together, the communist Stalin comes in from the USSR, and we have the entire Eastern Bloc, and a lot of Hungary fell into that Eastern Bloc. So it's not until about 1989, if my numbers are correct, about then that Tokaj is replanted. The grapes are replanted to make this amazing dessert wine that is Hungarian Tokaj. So if you don't know Tokaj, there's a good reason for that. It hasn't been around that many years. I think the cork dorks like me and my team, we love it, and there are a few other people out there that love it. Some major names invested in trying to rebuild these vineyards in Hungary and to help start up the Tokaj process. So to me, that was very cool. If you want a cool read, just go read a little bit about that. Because there were some really big names in the French industry and all over the place that had some money to invest, and they helped jumpstart the Tokaj industry again there in Hungary by starting their vineyards first. There are other wines grown in Hungary, but today is a sticky and sweet day, so we're going to focus on Tokaj. Tokaj also gets some aging and is, I believe, fortified, and then its levels of petunias tells you how sweet it is. So the five petunias that I tend to like is about 20% residual sugar. So you know, it's sweet. They come in 500 ml bottles, so not quite a full bottle, and they are going to set you back $45 to $55 a bottle. They're not inexpensive, but they are so worth it. Royal Tokai is one company. That was the one started in 1989 with Baron Rothschild and some of the other people from France. And since then, there have been several other people that have invested money in helping Congaree get back up and running. So the other one that we had on the shelf, or have on the shelf right now at the store, is Diznoko, and forgive me, but my Hungarian is not very good. It is D-I-Z-N-O-K-O or something along those lines. It's a really complex spelling and very, very good. That's the one we poured on the bar. The Royal Tokai I've had on several occasions and is fantastic. So those would be the ones I would recommend starting with. Again, you're going to have plenty of acidity to balance all of that sweetness. So don't be afraid of them. There's a wonderful learning curve. And again, if you see them on somebody's menu at a nice place for dinner and they're doing it by the glass, oh, take advantage. I mean, it's going to be expensive. It's not going to be cheap by the glass. We did it for about $15 by the glass, and it's a bottle of wine that's, I want to say it's about $50. So most restaurants are going to take a bit bigger markup than that, and they're going to, so they aren't going to be cheap, but it's a great way to explore a category without buying a $50 or $60 bottle or $45 bottle of wine and then finding out you don't care for it. All right, it wouldn't be a day about stickies without rushing over to France for quite quickly. But before we do that, I'm going to quickly tell you why ice wines are so darned expensive, because I mentioned the Enniskillen earlier and that it was, you know, over about $100 on the shelf. Ice wines are picked when the grapes are frozen. So they wait until, and it doesn't happen every year. It only happens when it gets cold enough, because if the grapes rot and get too disgusting on the vine, then they don't freeze well and there's nothing left. So if it doesn't freeze early enough, or freeze at the right sweetness, or freeze at all, then they can't make ice wine, unless they're making it, you know, Ode to Kenmore, where they stick it in the freezer and freeze it. But ice wines coming out of Canada, and most of them, and of course if they come out of Germany, same thing, they're going to freeze on the vine. So about 3 o'clock in the morning, they go out, the people who pick. Now, I'm live in Phoenix for a reason. I don't like to be cold. So can you imagine going out at 3 o'clock in the morning when it's the darkest and coldest part of the day? And you're going to pick the grapes off the vines, only the ones that are perfectly frozen and that are the right texture. And you're going to put them in a basket, hand-picked. They have to be hand-picked. And then you're going to take that basket back, and they are going to start to press these wines, press these grapes while they're still frozen, because then they don't have as much water in them, and they press out the parts that they want, the parts that are richer. So it's a very complex process. It's extremely hands-on. You have to do everything by hand, and it's cold. And not all the grapes freeze properly. So they have to sort them, and they have to make sure that they're the right grapes, and then they get the grapes. Small production. And then by the time you get to the end, you just have something that's very, very expensive. They're amazing. They're wonderful. Enniskillen is one of the better ones, or the only one we carry, I think, that's an ice wine. They're fantastic. They come out of Canada up by Niagara, I believe. And they're just amazing ice wines. I can't talk about these and not talk about the French fortified, or the French incredible French sweets called Sauterne. One of the most, we talked about briefly, one of the most revered. We talked about briefly when we talked about Bordeaux. It is Chateau Écame. The Écame 05 vintage will run you between $800 and $1,500 a bottle. If you Google it, you'll find out how much that costs. It is the only first growth Bordeaux from the 1855 classification that is not red. It is the only white. One of the characteristics of Sauterne, again, you're going to have that good acidity and balance. So that's the best part. One of the other things that I love about it is we have this stuff called botrytis. And people call it, you know, it's called a lot of things. Basically, it's really good mold. So if you love blue cheese, then this is the kind of mold that you want to have in your wine. It's called botrytis. They call it in the wine world, we call it the noble rot. Now, keep in mind, it can go from noble rot to gray rot, in which is the bad kind, by the way, in about one day. Okay, so you get it to where you want it. It can't rain. It kind of has to sit there, but it has to stay humid enough. So when you think about if you've ever done your own little science experiment in the fridge, I wouldn't want to eat any of that. Not on cheese either, unless it was already moldy blue cheese. But you think about that, and it goes, when you think about the science project you've left, it can go from, oh, it didn't look so bad, to, ooh, that's just really gross. Not only am I going to throw that away, I'm throwing the container it's in away because that's just wrong. I can't even use that container again because the stench stays in it. So, yeah, I've occasionally things get lost in my fridge amongst all the wine bottles. And back in the corner, I'll find it, and I'm like, ooh, I don't even know what this was. So the whole container, everything go in the trash. But noble rot, it's expensive mold. It is wonderful mold. It's what makes the Sauternes and also the wines coming out of Barzac. Same area of France, roughly, but Sauternes has the better name. And that's where Ecam comes from. Chateau Soutereau also comes from there. It'll run you about $150 for a half bottle, whereas Ecam is going to run you $800 to $1,500 for a full bottle. So, you know, you can always go try Chateau Soutereau and get, you know, a lot of the experiences without breaking the wallet. There are a few others, too, that are going to be down around $50, $60, $70 for a Sauterne. They are fantastic, and they will age. So if you want to pop them in your cellar and just let them sit there, they're just going to get better with time. Tokai that we talked about earlier, same thing. It's just going to get better with time. It's, you know, as it ages, as it moves forward, it's just going to continue to get richer. And what happens is you get less, you still have acid, but it's not the same kind of acidity. And then you get more caramel flavors, and it just gets more viscous, a little richer in that way. So it's kind of a little thicker in the mouth. It turns kind of a cool light brown color that's good. So it kind of moves from, it's more golden, becomes darker golden colors, and not quite as light. So it moves through these subtle changes. Want to talk just a little bit. We didn't get to Australia and California. They both have fantastic sweet wines. California's are small production. So if you're at a winery in California, same with Australia. Some of them just don't produce very much. But if you're at a winery in California and you don't understand why you can't get that sweet wine somewhere else, whether it's just a sweet or a port style or a whatever they do, because so many of them do so many wonderful things, that's because it's just a small production. A lot of times if they're waiting for the botrytis, it doesn't happen every year. It doesn't stay botrytis, or there's a small window of picking time. It's kind of the same story as with ice wines. These kind of wines are very difficult to make. They are, I would think that they would be a frustration for the winemaker on a regular basis, that they would, you know, just, I think it's going to be an awesome year for my whatever sweet wine. And then it would just, you know, one day of sunshine comes out and it bakes off all of the proper mold. Or it rains and rains and rains for 2 or 3 days in a row, and now your botrytis, your good stuff, has turned into the gray rot. And, you know, so the heartbreak opportunity there is so quick and so easy. So the wines are just extremely difficult to make and so incredible to taste. I highly encourage you to try them over the next couple of weeks. We're going to cover a couple more because I think I might have just enough time. One of the most amazing things I have ever had, and I can't get it here. I had it. I brought it home from Australia, and it was an aged, sweet Chenin Blanc. If you get an opportunity to try one of these, say you're in France, because they do them in France. Say you're in they don't particularly make this one anymore, I don't believe. But if you're in Australia and you have a chance to try a Chenin Blanc that was made sweet, so sec, S-E-C, and then they've aged it. Chenin Blanc is one of those grapes that everybody forgets ages so incredibly well. And often you have to be in Vouvray to get in Vouvray, France, to be able to get the opportunity to try these. They are flat amazing. And that was one of probably the best sweet wines I've ever had in my life. It had probably 8 or 10 years on it when it was given to me. And then I put another 5 on it before we actually opened it and drank it. And the biggest thing that the sadness that happened was that I didn't have another bottle to try and drink another time. All right, so botrytis, we've talked about Sauternes and Barzac, California sweet wines, some of the good ones that you can actually find on the shelves. They're going to not be inexpensive. They're going to set you back a little bit. Dolce from Farniente is amazing. It's not cheap. It's going to be $80, $90. But Dolce is fantastic, and Dolce is the Italian word or the Spanish word, whichever one you want to pick, for sweet. And it is made from some of their Semillon late harvest grapes, and it is absolutely fantastic. It's one that I would highly recommend trying. There's Violetta is one that's done by Gurgage Hills. Again, hard to find on the shelf, but often seen in restaurants. The biggest problem I have with a bottle of sweet wine is if it doesn't have a lot of staying time, like the ports, the sherries, the Madeiras, how do I get it all drank? I mean, you know, even if you have 2 or 3 people, you really need about 6 to get through a bottle of sweet wine, especially if it's an expensive one and it's really rich. We had, when we opened the Enniskillen Cab Franc, the ice wine at that dinner with that amazing cheesecake. There were six of us. And you know what? My 2 ounces that I got out of that bottle was more than enough. I didn't need any more sweet wine. All right, so if you're having a pairing that you just think is a nightmare, either don't pair it with a sweet wine, don't pair it with wine at all, pair it with coffee, and then have port as an after dinner, or do what so many people do, cheat with the cheese board, or just try it first. You know, buy something very similar or the exact item you're gonna have with your dinner, that you want to have with dinner, and make your cake, your pie, your creme brulee, your souffle, whatever it is you're doing for your dessert, and see if they work. Taste them together. That's probably the best advice I can give anybody, is when you're getting ready to have, especially if it's fancy. The last thing I want is for my food and my wine to crash. I want everybody to go, oh, wow, that was amazing. The misconception is often that a sweet wine automatically goes with dessert, and you really have to look at it, pair it, and make sure that you have carbonation to offset the cloyness, if there is that, or if you have a sweet wine to go with a cheesecake. Sometimes the carbonation works, sometimes the acidity is the balance. You just need to make sure you have complementing flavors and that their sweetness factor is very, very similar. Next week we are going to do Wine 201. So be ready. We're going to move on up. I'm going to give you some more details about oak aging and barrels, and we're going to move into just a little bit more detail. And then the week after that, which I think is the first Wednesday in September, get ready, because we're going to spend the day talking about food and wine, how to pair your food and wine, how to be happy with your pairings, and just our tricks, our insights. Jillian will be here with me that day, and we are going to give you the tricks and the insights that we use when we're working in the restaurant trying to help people pair their wines with their food menus. All righty, until next week, enjoy your Around the World in a Glass, have some dessert, and see if you can't buy a bottle of sherry or something else to go with that. We'll see you next time.
Thanks again for tuning in. Around the World in a Glass is heard every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Please join Kimber Stonehouse from Sportsman's Fine Wines and Spirits next week for another glass.